Welcome to You Decide. I'm your host, Errol Lewis. There was some big news this week out of Twitter. The CEO and co-founder, Jack Dorsey, announced that he is stepping away from the social media giant. Twitter's chief technology officer is going to take over, while Dorsey may possibly be starting to focus on Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. Meanwhile, over at Facebook, which is now calling itself Meta, there's been plenty of internal chaos because a former employee and whistleblower disclosed thousands and thousands of internal documents showing the effect of Instagram on teenagers and young children. Congress will soon be investigating that, and Instagram's chief executive and Mark Zuckerberg's right-hand man, Adam Mosseri, is going to testify. Now, my guest today knows about the ins and outs of big tech and social media giants and cryptocurrency and a lot more. Kara Swisher is a veteran tech journalist. She's been covering the internet since the early 1990s, and she's one of the few journalists who has actually sat down at length with Mark Zuckerberg. She is currently a contributing opinion writer at the New York Times, and she hosts multiple podcasts. One is called Sway, one is called Pivot. She also has a companion podcast for the third season of the show Succession on HBO. Here's our conversation. Like everybody else, I want to talk to you about tech stuff. But before we do that, I have to tell you, I am not only a big fan of Succession, but one of my favorite podcast interviews that we've done for You Decide, for this program, was with Brian Cox. He was a one-man play about LBJ, and we got him in, and I got to talk to him about the show. Anyway, huge fan. How did you end up doing this? I never would have thought that somebody like you would fit into a role exactly like that, this podcast that sort of, it's not just a recap, but sort of an expansion of the show each week.
Yeah, well, a couple of things. I've been working with HBO for a while, actually. I was an advisor to Silicon Valley, the TV show, which was very fun. I helped them figure out some guests and some advice, and the writers would meet with me and stuff like that to think of. It was all their ideas, but I just told them some stories, essentially. And I appeared on Silicon Valley three times, which is on HBO, as myself. The first season, the second season, and the final. I would think I was one of the final people on the last episode. And so I had a long relationship with them through that. And then I did some Game of Thrones stuff for them. We had some events in San Francisco. And so I always tend to do things that they ask me because I love some of their stuff. And I'm a huge Succession fan. And so what had happened was they were doing these podcasts and it was a very short thing. So I was able to do it. But they, because it was only eight of them or nine, whatever many episodes there are, I think it's nine. And I am a huge Succession fan. I talk about it all the time. And when Pineapple Street Studios was trying to figure out what to do this season, they had interviewed the actors. They were trying something fresh. Mm-hmm. Apparently the creators said, we need a Kara Swisher type. And Kara Swisher is a real fan, and Kara does stuff for HBO. And so I'd done it in the past, and we couldn't really, you know, typically I would have done a live event with the actors maybe or something for a premiere, an interview kind of thing. But then they offered this, and it was easy and fun and interesting, and and I got to see the season for everybody else. So that was one plus.
Yeah, that's there's some payment right there, right? But for the tiny minority of my listeners who don't watch the show and don't know the show, suffice it to say that it is the idea of Succession is that this is a powerful media family, and the children are all fighting for control over it.
Yes,
that's the basic framework of it. This last episode, though, you know, I listened to your podcast description of it. It was one of the most uncomfortable shows I've ever experienced.
The CPAC one or the party? Oh, the party.
The party one. This is the one where
I've seen them all, so I don't know where they are.
The son who's trying to take it over and has this weird Oedipal relationship with the father. The father's going to always beat him. I think that's pretty clear. Yeah. But he has this birthday party, and these are people of unimaginable wealth, right? And so he throws the most decadent party he can think of, and it's just a complete
asshole's
nightmare
party. Yeah, you know, I've been to parties like this in Silicon Valley, and so I was really, when I saw it, I was like, I'm totally familiar. I've been through a version of a vagina and stuff like that. And I've been to parties worse than this. There's one in my upcoming book, which was a baby shower for someone who's very well-known, a well-known billionaire. And it was, they had people wearing diapers. Like, it was crazy. And so I'm used to these parties where they spend enormous amounts. I'm also used to parties where they don't, you know, you're with enormously wealthy people that don't spend any money. They have like Safeway plastic things. And I'm like, hey, Where's the Mormon Tabernacle Crier? I need some. So I brought in someone who does parties for really wealthy people, Ken Falk, and talked also to the set designer, because it was, you know, it was great. That was a great show.
It was fascinating. I mean, I actually recognized a lot of it was clearly shot at 30 Hudson Yards, where, you know, Warner Media is based.
Yeah.
And I go there for HBO. So I was like, oh, yeah,
they
I know
did
that.
It in the shed. They did it in the shed.
Interesting.
I believe that's where they were. I don't get to go to any of these sets or anything like that, and it was already filmed. But I had great familiarity with, and I've been to Hollywood parties like this. And
well, you are like the mogul and tech whisperer on some level,
not
right?
Really.
Like you know these people. You chronicle their follies and their foibles and their failures and their financial success.
Yes.
And this is, I mean, objectively, this is like nothing the world has ever experienced, right? I mean, this is like Lorenzo de Medici times 100.
Well, you know, interestingly, the show Succession is loosely based on a lot of media families like the Murdochs. Obviously, people think of the Murdochs, but there's others like Viacom and Sumner Redstone and Sherry Redstone, who I know Sherry quite well. I've interviewed her several times. I met Sumner a couple times, when he was living. And one of the things that's interesting is that those were considered the really wealthy people back when, you know, kind of thing, right. And sort of the decadent people. And then tech came in and said, hold my beer. You know what I mean? Yeah, and so what's interesting about tech is they tend to try to hide it a little bit. And yet they all have private planes and they all, you know, they're off on yachts in Fiji. They do the whole rich people's thing. But what's interesting from my perspective is I met them before they were wealthy and before they had money and before they were anything. Like I met Jeff Bezos when he had a very small company, was still wearing khakis and was a little pudgy and not like the buff, whatever is going on right now kind of thing. And, you know, Sergey and Larry, I met them at Google. I met them in that garage that they started same thing with Travis Kalanick at Uber or whatever company, or the Instagram founders and Mark Zuckerberg, very small company at the time. Right. Yahoo had 5 people when I first went there. And so, and Netscape, you know, Google didn't exist for many years before that. And so it was really, it's just seeing them before, the before and after is kind of interesting.
Tell me this. Are in that earlier period, when you see them, when they're tinkering in their garage or, you know, they have a half an idea and they're trying to turn it into something, are they motivated by the idea of dominating the world and becoming unimaginably wealthy? That's got to be somewhere on the agenda, right?
No. They want to make their thing. They're makers. They're creators. You know what I mean? Like, I think making is, you know, it's oddly, Stephen Sondheim just died in that great song, Finishing the Hat, that he plays, that was in Sunday in the Park with George. You know, I think the line is, look, I made a hat where there never was a hat. You know, that's, and that's, of course, the whole, the emotional heft of that show is this guy can't make connections because he has to create. And I think having to create is what's really interesting. Or, you know, I was just going to say, I met with the founders of Airbnb and I had to buy their coffee because they didn't have any money. You know, of course, now they're millionaires. And there were 5 of them, or there were a lot of them. And I was like, this is a lot of coffee I'm buying for you people at an expensive San Francisco joint. You know, making is what they're most interested in. And money is sort of what happens later or what has happened later for them. So I wouldn't say money is there. Some of them maybe.
Well, but with the Mark Zuckerberg, what he has created. And I mean, I've read some of your observations about him, which is that he, you know, I mean, I read that, as you noticed, what I think some of us have noticed is that this is somebody who is not just socially awkward and not just socially underdeveloped, but sort of intellectually underdeveloped.
Well,
right?
He's trying. He meets with famous teachers all the time. You know what I mean? Over the years since he left Harvard, I think he's a little insecure about that. And so he spends a lot of time having these dinner parties and inviting famous academics in and things like that. He's trying to learn. It's just that what he has to do is beyond even the smartest person. Now, Mark, on the other hand, was always ambitious. There was always a level of ambition. He, you know, a lot of people do just like to make the thing, like are kind of interested in the puzzle part of it. I think Jack Dorsey is probably in that group. Mark wanted to dominate. Like to have a company that dominated around his ideas around community and connection. And that's what he's done. So, you know, he needed to have a few other reasons he wanted to make it, but that domination was his same thing with Bill Gates, domination.
To the extent that Facebook is now, you know, rebranding itself as Meta and trying to sort of roll out new technology and new modes and sort of be in wherever the digital universe is going.
Yeah.
Is that corporate survival? Is that him trying to stay relevant? Is that him trying to make something new?
All of the above. You know, I think it's a feint right now. These, you know, of course, it was announced right in the middle of the Frances Haugen whistleblower stuff. You know, I think he's bored with what he made, and it's kind of problematic and difficult to manage. And now he wants to go off and do this other thing. That's very typical, except that he's left this giant mess behind him. And you know, he's not interested in the main thing. It happens at a lot of these companies, like Google. Not everyone's interested in search anymore. They want to do the next thing, like rocket ship to the moon or whatever. Bezos is not doing rockets. He doesn't want to. He has truly innovated commerce, but now he wants to do rockets or whatever the heck he wants to do. And so I think, I think it's all vaporware around Metaverse, this thing. Mm-hmm. First of all, he didn't come up with it himself. Second of all, there's very little there. Third of all, some of the ideas are pretty lackluster as far as I'm concerned. And there's some very innovative people working on this stuff. I would say Facebook is not one of them. And I know we're supposed to call it Meta, but I'm just going to call it Facebook.
is there a sense, or do these folks have a sense of how of the profound amount of cultural and political anger that is rising at the mess that they have made around the fact that our very democracy is under threat, that, you know, generations of young girls have had their psyches damaged, and that, you know, there's a pretty straight line correlation between their so-called great idea and what the rest of us are now trying to unravel. Do they understand that this could lead to severe consequences, not only for them and for their creation, but for the next round of inventors?
Well, they don't accept your premise, by the way, just so you know, they don't. And it's also, let's be clear, it's some techies, it's some businesses, it's not all of them. I think you couldn't push that onto Apple necessarily, or Microsoft or something. So I think one of the problems that happens is we think there's big tech and they're all different. Look, the people at Apple do not like the people at Facebook. It's not like, you know, it's not like they're one big entity trying to do things. And in fact, and the people at Microsoft don't like the people. It's a lot of what you're talking about is Facebook, you know, and to a lesser extent, Twitter, because it's smaller. And done a little better job. And Google, you know, those are Google, which has YouTube specifically. The search part is not really a problem for anybody, I think, except that it's dominant. It's so dominant, there's no innovation. And that's a totally different story. And then there's Amazon with market issues. Like everybody, they also have different issues. But what you're talking about is largely surrounded Facebook and what it's done and its role. And so, yeah, I think they're aware of it. They've decided to be belligerent and defensive versus, you know, they apologized for many years, did nothing about it. And now they decided to be belligerent and possibly do nothing about it. And so I think they're aware of it. They just don't accept your premise. They'll say things like, people have been killing each other for centuries. And I was like, yeah, but it's amplified now. Yeah, it's more dangerous because it reaches more people. It's propaganda on steroids. And they think they'll say, well, Trump's the problem, or, you know, pick what side you're on. That's what they'll say. It's people. Is, you know, guns don't kill people. People kill people. But guns, AK-47s certainly kill a lot more people.
Right. I mean, and they are the gun salesmen. I mean, you know, at the start of this podcast, almost as an experiment, I went and started to mess with some of the Facebook targeting tools and, like, you know, made little ads and sort of targeted them. I was astounded at the level of targeting that you can do.
Yes.
Where if I've interviewed a politician, I can send it to, you know, everyone in their district who listens to NPR, you know, and this was thousands of people. Mm-hmm. And at a shockingly low cost, I could reach those people. Now, my message was, hey, check out my podcast. You might find it interesting.
Sure.
But if I had some pernicious or false messaging or hateful messaging that I wanted to aim at them, it was there for the taking and Facebook didn't care.
No, it's designed for malevolent users more than anybody else. It's they must love it. You know, the very evil among us really do have Facebook's been a gift to them, essentially.
What I've heard in the way of possible responses is just straight antitrust, you know, sort of traditional, the same way Microsoft got broken up, the same way AT&T got broken up once upon a time, IBM before that, that is the fate awaiting some of these tech giants like Facebook and like Google. What do you think of that?
More Google than anybody else because of the search market dominance and the extension of its products into other areas using search as the tip of the fear. I think that's, they're more under antitrust danger, I would suspect. I think most people agree. You know, there's lots of ways they're under siege. One is antitrust. I think that's going to be a long road and unlikely to really make a lot of changes. The threat of antitrust actually helps a lot. That helped deal with the Microsoft situation. Then there's, you know, enforcement of current laws, new regulation. That's, I think, the most important thing because it's immediate if they can pass it. The U.S. is notoriously unregulated. This industry compared to everybody else. There's international regulation. There's some really tough stuff in Canada and Australia and Europe and everywhere else. And then you have, you know, the ability to give the agencies that deal with them, like the FTC and the Justice Department, more money. There's issues around scrutinizing mergers, maybe unwinding some mergers. And then there's liability, which is a problem because of Section 230. And so there's lots of different ways that this is going to go down. I think antitrust is probably the least effective compared to the others, but it'll be a combination of those things. And then self-regulation, of course.
Are they interested in self-regulation? I mean, I keep hearing about how they're going to do more content moderation, and it sounds false from the minute they say it.
Well, it's like saying your bank's going to self-regulate. I don't think so. You know, I mean, I think it's a combination of that. And they certainly haven't done a very good job so far. And, you know, it is the government's job on lots of issues like this and things like facial recognition, transportation. This is the government's job at this point. Mm. And so the government has to really step in and figure out a smart way to promote innovation. That's another thing they could do. They could fund more innovative things so that there's more competition. Study how mergers and acquisitions happen. There's, again, tool after tool after tool the government has not availed itself to.
Right. I was listening to your podcast discussion about the latest doings over at Twitter, where the CEO, Jack Dorsey, has decided to leave. The price of the stock has been tanking. It's been kind of dead money for almost 10 years now. If you invested money in Twitter, it was like putting the money under your bed in a shoebox, more or less. What comes next for that technology? Because we've actually done some podcasts over their new audio tool, which is actually pretty nifty. They didn't charge us anything for it, but I imagine that could change.
That is a company I've gotten so much value out of and paid not one dime. That I don't even understand. I pay for stuff. Think about it.
Yeah.
It's great. I mean, it's also can be a toxic waste dump and full of bots and awful people, but it's also something that's been valuable to me over the years, and I paid not one dime to it.
Mm. Does that mark it as an investment opportunity?
Yes, that's what Scott and I have been talking about. That Scott Galloway and I. I mean, this is the most undervalued asset in the internet spectrum. You know, it hasn't gone up in value. It's very important. It's impactful. The world's most powerful people use it. People scream about getting kicked off of it, like former President Trump.
You can buy a piece of it for $41 today.
You know, there's an idea that's like this thing called the DAO, which is a group of people getting together to create these investment groups. There's all kinds of activity going to happen around Twitter very soon.
Mm, interesting. Talk to me about crypto. We have a mayor here in New York City who I think has, you know, made a gesture toward being in the space. The gesture that he made was to say that he'd take his first three paychecks in Bitcoin or something, which marked him as somebody who doesn't quite understand this stuff.
I mean, you can get paid in crypto, but
you could do it now, right? You could take your whole paycheck and buy some crypto and hope for the best, right?
Yes, he could. Yes. He's doing it as a stunt. You do realize that that's what's happening here.
So. Yeah. Well, I mean, I saw the mayor of Miami has something where they put out some Miami coin.
Yeah.
And every time you mint one of them, the city gets a little bit. And they say that they've come up with like $20 million for the general fund to do various good works with. That struck me as possibly interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, could be. It could be. I mean, we'll see. I mean, I think what he's trying to do is look, New York's the center of finance and has been a little less the center of tech. It's not been a small amount, but it's not been that great. Center of media, except not anymore necessarily. But it fits in with the finance stuff. And so it makes sense that they go for the, you know, why let Miami have it? Like, why in the world would you let Miami have it?
Right. From your point of view, how do people get rich in cryptocurrency?
By buying it. It's gone up a lot. You know, it's a speculative asset right now. Obviously, there's a lot of tools going to be. I think probably more the people that are going to get really rich are going to be making, you know, how do you get rich off the internet? You might have asked yourself 25 years ago, right? Well, some companies, you know, it's free. Some companies took advantage of it. Information is what Google's giving you is stuff that's free that someone else could have made, right? Mapping, you know, we paid for the maps, not Google. Google now pays for some of the maps, this and that. And so, you know, I think a lot of the tools around it are going to be very valuable. There's a lot of companies like Ledger. There's a whole bunch of, there's tons in Coinbase, whatever. There's a but they'll come and go, but there'll be a lot of that tools. There's going to be a whole industry around it. There's going to be advising. There's going to be everything. And then there's the assets themselves. And eventually they'll be used for currency. Right now they're mostly used as a speculative asset, and they've gone up a lot. So
yeah,
if you bought it very early, I have some that I bought a long time ago and lost. It's on some hard drive I bought. I was writing about it 10 years ago, 50, whatever it started. Someone said, buy this and to try it out. And I bought it for $50 each. And there were 6,000, 10 of them. I don't know where they are.
And each one would be worth 60 odd thousand bucks about now. Oh,
wow. No idea where they were.
I thought that the most interesting thing about it, it always strikes me, is that the verification, you know, the sort of anonymous and instant and sort of complicated verification protocols were the most valuable part of it, right? I mean, speculating, you know, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't, but being able to sort of verify, you know, so you could use it for birth certificates, driver's licenses, and all kinds of other stuff.
Right? This is the NFT, or, you know, yeah, I think it's going to, this is how things are going to change. There's no reason we have contracts the way we do, and verification of that. You know, I did an early episode on NFTs with Beeple, and everyone was like, I don't understand why is anything worth anything? Why is a piece of furniture worth something? Like it's actually more valuable if you know it's verified from who, you know, Kanye or whoever. This is a shoe Kanye West says is the first shoe. It will be a collectible, right? Why are baseball cards? So I don't know why people go, it's sort of like when the internet started, everyone's like, I don't get it. I'm like, what don't you get? What is the internet? Everything. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Well, I can get a book. I'm like, yeah, but it'll be online. Like, you have to start thinking like certain things, like food needs to be physical at this moment in time. But, you know, eventually that'll probably change in some way. And so that's how I tend to look at it.
Yeah. No, right. NFTs. I was trying to explain this to my son. Actually, I have a son who's I know from doing a little research that you have a son born in 2005, as do I. We both have 16-year-olds.
One of them.
And I was trying to explain to him, you know, because he was asking this very question. And I said, well, think of an NFT like a pair of Jordans that you don't open, right? I mean, it's a pair of original Jordans. It's somewhat limited in a way.
You could do other things. Like there was one, I think Quentin Tarantino was talking about it. I think he was doing one. You could have lunch with him every year and watch that movie with him. Like it could go with it. It could be anything. It could be, there could be physical elements to it. But like, I always go to it like they're like, you know, I can own the Mona Lisa. I'm like, first of all, you don't own the Mona Lisa. And by the way, you get to see the Mona Lisa. Like, but the person who owns the Mona Lisa gets the value of the Mona Lisa, which is pictures of it, et cetera, right? You know, copyright. Like, that's not real. It's postcards. And then people also, well, people steal it. I'm like, people steal pictures of Mona Lisa. They still make a lot of money off them. Like, or songs. Like, people have to sort of, it's the same thing around currency. I don't get this cryptocurrency. I'm like, you know, I can't, I like to have my money. I'm like, what are you like one of the trolls at Gringotts or whatever, demons, whatever they were. You know, like there's not a room with your gold in it and sitting. I was like, when did you last see your money? Like, cause you never see your money.
I don't get the cloud.
I had someone say that. I don't get the cloud. I'm not in the cloud. I'm like, you're so in the cloud. Everything you do is like your email. Like email is the cloud. Like, sorry to tell you, you just
right. This email you sent me telling me that you're not in the cloud is actually in the cloud. Right?
And so that's what I mean. Like, you never see your money. You don't have a pile of money in your mattress. You're an idiot if you do, and you never see it, and you're never going to see it. It's numbers on a ledger, and so this makes it presumably a safer ledger, is essentially.
That is what they say. Okay. The IRS question asking if you own any currency to me was kind of an ominous shot across the bow that the government
they need to regulate
thinks it's real enough that they want to take some of it from you.
They should. You know, it can be used to hide things, as could like piles of money in a, like, you know, whatever. I don't know if you watch Narcos, but they hide it everywhere. They hide the money in the book. So whatever, turn it into furniture and then melt it down. I don't know. Like, just people have to get out of their heads on like that. It's so weird and exotic, it will have speculative elements that is dangerous, just as the internet did at its beginning. And then the regular people will come in, and that'll like cable, same thing.
But before I let you go, because I know you've got some time constraints, the fact that Donald Trump is fighting so hard to get back into social media. Should tell all of us that it is something worth watching, right? I mean, he thinks it can make him the most powerful man in the world again. And it already did once, right? What does that mean for the rest of us? Do we need to rethink how we consider social media?
No, I think, you know, there's like anything else. You know, a guy who runs, is president of Microsoft, wrote a book called Tools and Weapons. You think of a knife. A knife can be a tool. It could be a weapon, right? And the same thing with this stuff. It depends on how it's managed, how it's sent out, it's distributed, how it's monitored and regulated. A lot of stuff is, there's a lot of this stuff can be incredibly useful. It is incredibly useful. I think the issue is what you can have someone who's super enjoyable, like Ryan Reynolds on Twitter, who's wonderful to follow. He's very funny. Or you can have Donald Trump, who's a toxic waste dump, right? Of malignant utterances. He also is using it for marketing. You could almost look like, you know, look, I don't like to bring the Hitler Mussolini thing, but they used radio and film, right? That's the medium they used. John F. Kennedy used television to get himself going. Like that was critically important because Nixon looked so bad, like initially. You know, I don't know. Lots of people use print when it started, when the printing press started. This is the equivalent of that. And Donald Trump has had used social media until he was kicked off perfectly. Like used it for because he had ill intent to use it to create all kinds of trouble and to communicate directly. Now he's been kicked off because he kept breaking the rules over and over and over again. They didn't kick him off until finally, you know, January 6th it happened. One of the interesting things is you could have foreseen what was happening. I wrote a column in 2019 saying, what if he gets on Twitter? I literally say, what if he gets on Twitter, loses the election and says the election was a fraud and then calls on his people to attack the result? And everyone at the dinner party was like, Kara, that's ridiculous. I'm like, no, this is exactly where it's going. This is. And so one of the things I'd like to get through to people right now is they love to use the terms misinformation, disinformation, fake news, cancel culture. It's all propaganda, like not cancel culture. That's a whole separate topic, but it's propaganda. It's amplified. Someone at Rene Durest at Stanford calls it ampliganda. It's amplified propaganda is what's happening here. And if you look at it that way, it's easier to understand. And in some cases, it's amplified marketing. In some cases, it's amplified propaganda. And we know what propaganda is meant to do, which is behavioral modification of people. And that's what's happening on the bad stuff. On the good stuff, it's just an easier way to communicate. And sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's silly, like television was the boob tube, but it also had the Sopranos, right? Like that's the kind of thing you have to think about. And so one of the things that's important is our legislators have left us woefully unprotected in lots of ways by allowing these people to become the richest and most powerful people in the world and not having one stitch of regulation around them. And I'm not a big proponent of regulation, but I think none is probably too little. That's my
Okay. All right. We're going to leave it there for now. I don't know what, if you call yourself a journalist or a technologist, I will think of you as a futurist.
I'm an entrepreneur. I try to do. I saw media, the troubles of media coming. And I was like, what interesting thing can I make? And so I consider myself like Stephen Sondheim or any of these people, maker. I make things. And so that's how I look at it.
So. And you make it well. And thanks so much for coming on to talk with me a little bit.
All right. Thanks, Errol.
That's going to do it for this episode of You Decide. As always, I'd love to hear your thoughts about this segment or any of our others. You can find me on Twitter at Errol Lewis or leave a message for me at 212-379-3440. You can also email us at yourstoryny1@charter.com. And be sure to also listen to my colleague's podcast, Off Topic on Politics, comes out every week with complete analysis of New York politics. I'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.